I think if you were fearing anything and then you looked around and you have those people around you, suddenly the fears go away because they're the people you're going into battle with.
Welcome to Sport Inspires, a podcast recorded in collaboration with the Mary Peters Trust and made possible by the Coca-Cola Thank You Fund. Today's episode is with Irish hockey captain Katie Mullen, the Korean player leading the team to their first ever Olympic Games. Along the way, myself and gold medalist Lady Mary Peters asked Katie about the role team spirit has played in their success, what it was like to win a silver medal in the World Cup, and how they've been training through lockdown to become the first women's team in history to take home an Olympic medal in just a few weeks' time. Thanks so much for being here, and we really hope that you enjoy.
Good question. It's definitely like the backyard with my two older brothers
yeah.
and football. Yeah, and just me being, we had like a black gate down the bottom of the yard and that was the net, obviously. And just me stuck in front of it just for day after day after day. And it was just a constant, like, once we think you're good enough to play outfield, one of us will go into nets and you can play outfield. And
crazy.
That was just like a constant battle and struggle for me as a youngster.
I did a book to encourage young women to get involved in sport. And those that we interviewed, that was the biggest answer, was the influence of brothers.
Yeah.
And I had an older brother and I had to beat him at everything, you know, still do.
Yeah.
Although he lives in Australia. And it is surprising to me. I know that through life, parents and teachers and other people influence you. But brothers can be a true inspiration, can't they?
Oh, totally. And it was never for a second like a gender thing in our house. It was just like, once you're mm-hmm. good enough, like, you know, you can play outfield. And I suppose that they now, my brothers now, claim every thing that I achieve was, if it wasn't for them coming down on me so hard in the early years. But yeah, I would agree, like, looking at some of the players in our team, a lot of us have older brothers. Do you know, and that's what made us play football in the backyard, which made us love sport, do you know?
I used to shout, oh, please wait for me.
Well, you were smack bang in the middle, weren't you? Like, two older, two younger.
Yeah, you know that forgotten middle child that everyone talks about, the one that just has to take over in the background, that was me.
And were you just as hard on your younger sisters?
I would definitely say they were a bit more girly than I was. Mm. I was definitely the tomboy of the family. But yeah, they'd say just my competitive nature growing up just ended in tears a lot in our house. And they weren't my tears. they definitely, like, we're all just such a sporty family.
Mm.
And different sports, actually, in our house. Like,
that's cool.
Rugby was my eldest brother, and then my other brother was Gaelic football. I was hockey. My sister below me, she rowed for Ireland.
Wow.
And then my younger sister, she's hockey as well. So just such a mix.
So where do you go from Blackgate football? What was your next kind of foray into sport then?
It was then just years of, like, okay, swimming club at 7 o'clock in the morning. Then we're going straight over to hockey with wet hair. Then, do you know, like, on to playing like football. I played a lot of football for Triangle FC, and it was just all day, every day when I wasn't in school, I was playing some form of sport. And some was on all boys teams, some was on mixed teams, some was on girls teams, and it was sport all the time and balancing it.
Mm-hmm. And did you like individual sports, or were you always drawn to that sort of team sport?
I was definitely always drawn to the team sport thing.
Why
yeah.
is that?
I don't know. I think I think part of it is coming from quite a big family. I was just used to always like playing sport with other people, and yeah, I don't know if I could have handled it, all of the pressures on my own as an individual athlete. So I've great admiration for anyone who does individual sport, and it was actually a big learning point for me last year through lockdown, COVID. I know we don't want to talk about COVID too much, but all of the training sessions I had to complete by myself, it was so foreign to me and all of my teammates. Like, it was so foreign to all of us to have to go out every single day by yourself, try and find a patch of grass or whatever. And yeah, it gave me a whole new level of respect for individual athletes.
Wow. And so as you start to get a bit older then and go into secondary school and beyond, you know, you start to probably whittle down the amount of sports that you play. So yeah, as that kind of filtering process happens, like, what starts to stick?
Yeah, well, homework didn't stick. It was stick to all the sports and homework can suffer. And then I suppose it was kind of whittled down to, I was just playing hockey all winter, because obviously hockey's a winter sport, and then camogie all summer. But then as international hockey came on the scene at under 16 level, it obviously runs as well through the summer. So, but the big influence for me would have been my PE teacher at school, who was Bridget. Also my hockey coach, Bridget. Yeah. And just, she was still playing for Ireland at the time. And so just seeing the opportunities with international hockey and with her driving me and pushing me, just, it was a no-brainer to then prioritise hockey.
Were you still at school when you went to the Junior Olympics, Youth Olympics?
Youth Olympics, yeah. I remember actually, it was 2010, and I remember our GCSE results came out when we were in Singapore.
Oh, wow.
And they were coming out the morning we had a game.
No.
And there was obviously the Ulster players were all getting our results, and there was a couple of the girls went ahead and opened their results that morning. The game was in the evening, but I was like, no way. And so my mum was in Singapore, my dad was at home, so he was under strict instructions, don't open the envelope until after the game, and then he was to text mum the results and I was to open the text message. Anyway, I don't know what exactly happened in there on the day, but I just waited until after the game, and I remember me and a few of the other girls all opening our GCSE results together in Singapore. So yeah, it was strange, like, but...
But a wonderful experience at that age to get to the other side of the world and to play for your country.
Definitely. And the amazing thing about the Youth Olympics was anything I imagine the Olympics to be like, the Youth Olympics were like, do you know, with the likes of the food hall and all the interaction between all the athletes and going to watch different events and even just the village environment that they had set up. It's everything I imagine that the Olympics will be like. And just people like, you know, I remember us meeting the likes of Tom Daley at the Youth Olympics, and you meet these, even some of the Jamaican sprinters, and then you're watching TV 4 years later and there they are at the Senior World Athletics Championships. And do you know, it's mad, yeah. So it was such a cool experience, and there's actually only myself and Roisin Upton on the team now that were at those Youth Olympics, and I think that always kept us sort of that extra bit motivated to qualify for the Games.
And where do you think the rest of them are now? Are they, have they given up the sport, or are they?
No, there's a mixture. A lot of my age group actually went to America to play on hockey scholarships when they left school. So that was what a lot of them did, and most still play club level in Ireland outside of that. And a few of the girls have been in and around our squad, and yeah, it was just such an amazing experience. I remember we'd never really played the Dutch before, and of course, the Dutch are the the queens of hockey. And
but queens of supporters as well, yeah, in their orange, aren't they?
For sure. Mm-hmm. And we scored before them in the game, and we went 1-0 up against the Dutch, and we had this massive pylon in the middle of the pitch, and they scored 8 seconds later. So I learned a lesson for life that day. Don't celebrate the goals too hard. Yeah.
You build up to the World Cup in London. Must have been unbelievable. Where were you in the rankings when you went off to London?
So we were 16 in the world going to that tournament. And yeah.
How did you build up the team spirit as a team captain to enjoy it so much? I mean, the joy for me was watching you all singing and smiling and enjoying it to the full, which is what sport should be all about.
Yeah, it's a strange one, because a lot of people have asked me over the last couple of years, you know, did your psychologist sit you down and tell you, you know, you must smile and try to look relaxed? And I always like kind of have a giggle to myself. I'm like, no, not at all. But for us, like, the dreams of playing in major tournaments was all we'd ever, those were our ambitions from day one. And obviously the World Cup was our first time doing that. But like when you've played so many hockey matches with 5 or 6 parents and a couple of dogs on the sideline, and then all of a sudden you're running out into the stadium, you know, packed out, mm-hmm, with roaring fans and those flamethrowers coming out the side of the tunnel. Like, when you have no, people had no expectation on us. Like, there wasn't a pressure on us. Like, you couldn't, how could you not smile? You know, like, and I remember in the tunnel stood beside the American captain, and I remember looking at her, and she was so tense and so serious. I remember thinking, I remember feeling almost sorry for, mm-hmm, her, because she looked like she had the weight of the world on her shoulders. Mm. But like, for us, it was like, sure, we'll give it a go. And you know, we were just honestly very relaxed and very like just excited to open our experience of playing in major tournaments. And
did you realize how much you're and making other people at home who are watching so excited?
I genuinely don't think we did. No. And I think that was probably best for the better that we didn't. I actually had just turned my phone off after the quarterfinal, and I didn't look near it again until after the final, because it was hard to fathom what was going on. But we certainly found out the day we landed back in Dublin and we got that reception. That was when it really hit us, mm-hmm, the impact that we'd had and the number of people that watched and supported us.
Yeah, and the impact that you guys had on the sport as well is just amazing.
Yeah, and I think we're still reaping the rewards of that, and hopefully for a long time to come as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the number of kids now playing the sport is just amazing. And I'm almost a little bit envious of them, because they have just these amazing opportunities to come and watch us play that we never had growing up. And yeah, it's just brilliant for our sport.
So, I mean, how do you maintain that relaxed sort of posture and environment now going into the Olympic Games? Because, you know, before you had really, as you said, nothing really to prove. And yeah, okay, you're ranked 8th now, so you're higher than you were, but you guys are clearly going for a medal. So how do you not turn into the tense captain in the tunnel?
Yeah, it's an ongoing battle. I think we are under no illusion now that all the other nations are taking us a lot more seriously. So there's a lot more homework going into them studying us and what we do and our players. So we've had to reinvent ourselves, because, you know, the same game plan never works twice. So I think reinventing ourselves has been a lot of fun, and we've definitely added a few more strings to our bow in terms of youth players coming into the squad now, adding something different. But I think the biggest thing in terms of keeping that relaxed environment is just when you bring, there's something really special about this group of players, and when you bring us all together in a changing room before going out to play any opposition anywhere in the world. We just come together.
Okay.
And it's so hard to put into words, but music is a massive thing in our team environment, and the music goes on and we come together, and honestly, we just feel invincible. Yeah. Like, it's just it's friendships. It's so many years of training hard together. It's such low moments together of failing to qualify for Rio. All of those emotions. You've gone through like the toughest things in your life together and the highest moments in your life together, and it just, you just, we just gel so well. And so I think if you were fearing anything and then you looked around and you have those people around you, suddenly the fear go away because they're the people you're going into battle with.
Yeah.
And they'll be friends for life.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
For sure. Like, one of my favourite quotes growing up was one an underage coach gave to me: performance is temporary, but friendship is everlasting. And it's so true. Some of those girls are, yeah, friends for life.
I was intrigued to see on your website that there was a mention of naked hockey. And I was intrigued as to whether you would strip down.
Mary Peters?
Shame this is all audio. Naked is a Northern Irish hockey brand.
Oh, wow.
So I was playing with a German brand a few years ago, and then Naked was started up by one of the guys I know through Lisnagarvey Hockey Club, and he just reached out, and I was one of the first players to sign with them. And it was just purely that I wanted to support local, and they're doing really, really well now, and they're a brilliant brand. They've been anything that any sort of support I need, they give it. And they also advocate for a lot of like youth mental health stuff and that kind of thing too, which I like to get involved in. So yeah, no, it's more, some of their captions are quite catchy, actually, with the old name, but yeah, it's good.
You mentioned mental health there. Have you ever talked about it within the team? Has it been an issue?
I think the channels have been there for players to talk about their mental health. I think sometimes it's almost harder with your teammates that you're so close to, but we have a very strong like support staff network for discussing mental health issues. But I think the biggest thing is like just for like young girls and young kids these days to understand the benefits of sport with regards to your mental health, and that for me is massive, because I think I hear, you know, school is hard enough as it is, and then you hear of students stepping away from their sport maybe in their final year of school during their A-levels or their GCSEs, and I reflect on my time, and sport and my academia always went hand in hand. You know, when I was really struggling with something academically, I'd go out and hit 100 hockey balls.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, I'd feel a lot better. So I think the biggest thing is advocating the actual benefits of sport to your mental health, especially for teenagers these days.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier, you know, that you would skip the homeworks. But in saying that, you have done well, and you went off and studied biomed. And, you know, during the pandemic there, you were involved in some really interesting work. Do you mind just sharing a little bit
more? Yeah, so I work for a company, I'm born and bred in Belfast, Axial 3D. I'm a medical visualisation engineer there, and they've been so incredibly supportive of my hockey career and supporting me through to the Olympics. And I think they see a lot in the person that works for the company, which I think is huge. I had kind of stepped away from work last year just before pandemic hit. And then, of course, the Olympics was postponed and I was kind of left not really sure, you know, what to be doing with myself, and work just contacted me, and they were first of all incredibly gutted for me about the Olympics being postponed, and they just said, listen, the work's here if you want it. And I started again the next day and just dove in head first. I think, you know, it really helped me to process the games being postponed and sort of distracted me in a really positive way. And at that point, it was, you know, when there was a real shortage of PPE equipment. So we used the 3D printers and work to print lots of face shields for PPE. And we were doing all sorts of different projects to help the local hospitals get more ventilators up and running. So it was really, you know, fulfilling work, and you really felt like you were, you know, doing your bit and making a difference. So, yeah, I'm just incredibly grateful to all of the opportunities that they've given me.
It's cool. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, you see it, and I suppose we all can understand it in like a school context where you see, you know, athletes trying to juggle their schoolwork. But then going forward into like adult life, it's like, how the heck do people balance their sport with making money and having a career, and you're trying to think about what's after sport? It's a lot to kind of juggle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is very difficult. And I think, you know, as athletes, we always want to be like progressing. And I think it's very hard just to set your career to the side and just press pause and just go 100% into your sport. You kind of always want to continue to progress your career at the same time. We have that kind of hunger to do that. And so finding a company like Axial, they've created the best opportunity for me to continue to progress my career, but it never interferes with my hockey. But time management, I have it down to a T at this point. And it's probably one of the best skills I think you can have. And sometimes it's undervalued, but managing my time right from when I was doing my GCSEs and I was preparing for Youth Olympics through to now when I've been managing my job and preparing for the actual Olympics. So, yeah, time management is key.
So how many hours a day would you be training now in preparation for Tokyo?
So at the minute we're training between, like, it depends on the day, but it's between like 2 and 6. And that would include everything from your, you know, stretching routine to get yourself ready to train, to the heat chamber sessions that we're now doing over in Jordanstown to get ourselves acclimatized for the conditions in Tokyo. So we're doing a lot, and then we have our down days as well to recover. But over the last couple of months, especially when a lot of people have been experiencing lockdown, we've been so grateful that we've been able to get together and train and get out on a pitch and socialise. And yeah, we're under no illusion that we've been very lucky to be able to do that since September.
But that might not have happened had you not done so well by getting the silver at the World Cup.
No, I think, you know, the likes of Sofco and Park Developments, the support that they've given us to be able to train semi-professionally to prepare for an Olympic Games where you're competing against teams who are full-time professionals and have been for years. And I think what we did at the World Cup when we were completely amateur was a little bit of an anomaly. And for us to now stay in the top 10 and back up our performances and, I suppose, help the next generation of hockey players to come through across the country, we needed that support. And yeah, they've been incredibly special partners to work with, and they're very much part of our journey, not just someone that just funds us and that's it. That, you know, we know them very well and they're very involved. So yeah, it's the funding thing is always a challenge, but it's something we really relish in. You know, knowing what we've done when we had very little funding, you know, it gives you huge confidence. Mm-hmm.
This is a bit random, but this really jumped out at me whenever I was preparing for this. Talk to me about the role that camogie's played in your journey.
Massive. For starters, you know, it's a stick and a ball. So hand-to-eye coordination comes into it straight away. I think as well what camogie gave me was, it was probably with my local team when we won the All-Ireland Championship. That was my first experience of putting a group of players together who have the same goal and nothing stands in the way of that goal, and how powerful that can be in terms of being successful. So experiencing that at 14 years of age, you know, it made me realize that anything is possible when you get the right group together and you're just so driven on that one goal. So, yeah, Camogie's given me obviously specific skills that are transferable onto a hockey pitch, but it also gave me that idea of like how powerful a team environment can be. Mm-hmm. And I think as well, you know, there's something about like the support that I've taken from my days playing Camogie that now people are just, everyone just wants hockey to do well, and there's a huge support network there from where I'm from, which is very special.
That's cool. And is there any like specific like styles or techniques or strengths that you notice Camogie players have versus just a traditional hockey player when they come into the sport?
Yeah, well, it's funny, like hockey's become a lot more 3D in the last kind of 5 years where people are carrying the ball. Now, Shirley McKay's been carrying the ball in the air for long before everyone else, but it's become a lot more 3D, and that's obviously a skill that comes straight from Camogie. So you notice that the girls who've played Camogie are doing that naturally already. But when I was kind of balancing the two sports a lot, I would have always found I'd go play Camogie for a few matches or for a summer. And obviously it's a bit more physical. There's a bit more contact. And I'd step back on a hockey pitch and I'd always find myself in the naughty chair within like the first 30 minutes because I'd just go in a bit too hard. But yeah, there's
how many sticks did you break? Camogie sticks are ash, made of ash, yeah, aren't they? And they break very easily.
Definitely broke a few. I've had a few broke on me as well, which is never pleasant. But
you've had a long career in your hockey. What would you consider your most successful moment in it? Not as a team, but as your own personal success.
That's
Well, it can be part of a team.
I suppose for me, the honour of running out of the tunnel on World Cup final day, like past, it's only on the final day do they actually have the trophy on the pitch. And like running out past it, it was just something I had never envisaged. And I suppose for me, that was a huge moment. And such pride and honour to be able to lead the girls out and kind of look down the line, and those were my teammates going into battle together, and that was something I just never envisaged doing, and it was a very, very special moment. And what made it even more special was the fact that it was so close to home.
Yeah.
And whenever they announced that the World Cup was in London, we were kind of a bit like, oh, we'd have liked to have gone to Sydney or we'd have liked to have gone. But with what happened,
yes, it
was the perfect place for it to be, because people could fly over and watch the games, and we would never have had the support that we did if it was further afield. So it all worked out perfectly.
How will that affect you in Japan, do you think, that you won't have your family and friends supporting?
I think, yeah, it's very disappointing. Our parents and family members have almost formed their own little crew at this stage that travel to all the tournaments together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the night that we qualified in Donnybrook, as I say, it wasn't just about the 18 girls on the pitch. It was everybody who, from coaches to ex-internationals, looking into the stands, seeing people who'd, you know, been your inspiration, along with like my granny was there, and
wow,
just all of these people who a lot of them would have actually came to Tokyo, and that was kind of their plan for the last couple of years. So I think there's a bit of a catch-22 in my house, because I was devastated for them that they aren't able to come, but they're devastated for me that we aren't able to have supporters. So yeah, it's going to be tough, but I've no doubt they will make the most of the bad situation and throw whatever parties are allowed. And I'm sure it'll be rowdy enough, but Also, I just hope that at least maybe some Japanese fans will be allowed into the stands, because we all know from the Rugby World Cup that Japanese fans are willing to get behind anybody. So hopefully there'll be a few cheering the Irish on.
So good. And I mean, you've used that phrase, go into battle, a few times now in the conversation. You know, what do you guys do to get yourself psyched up for a match, especially when there aren't spectators there to kind of feed off that energy?
Yeah, well, I suppose I sort of mentioned it earlier, but music plays a huge part in our pre-match preparation. And I remember when our new coach came in and he got on the bus like the first day and we were, you know, roaring and screaming. Not many of us can sing, but we still call it singing. And after, he was just like, gosh, everyone seems, you know, not focused or a bit, you know, exerting a lot of energy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we had to sort of explain to him, no, that's what makes us tick. And so I suppose that the music piece is definitely a huge factor. And there's certain songs that we listen to every time, and they have certain little dance routines involved. We'll not say much more than that.
We watched them on the
pre-game
program that they did, which was absolutely brilliant. It was such an inspiration to me to see that you could all enjoy each other's company so much and play sport.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that I loved the most about that documentary was it just captured the raw people. Yeah. Like, that is genuinely how we are all the time when we're together. And I was a bit worried when they were saying about doing a documentary. I was like, I don't want us to come across as something that we're not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it couldn't have captured us better. And I think that's credit to the editors. Mm-hmm.
So is your bus driver like bopping along now? Is he like all bored? He's like, I get it.
Yeah, sometimes. And then you get a new bus driver and he's completely lost.
So, I mean, what are you personally doing, like, even from like a mindset perspective, and what are you encouraging your team to do as that Olympic date just gets closer and closer and closer? Like, you know, we're really moving into this final sort of stretch here. How are you guys preparing beyond the training, I suppose, for that moment?
Yeah, there's lots going on behind the scenes. I suppose the very unique thing about hockey is that we have these European Championships in June prior to the Olympics. Okay. So we have to peak twice in a very short period of time. And the European Championships is actually the qualifier for next year's World Cup. So it's not just Europeans that you can, you know, so it's huge that we perform there and finish top five. So we're trying to manage that whole emotion in and around the team. And then I suppose, like, it's our first Olympics, so we're all a bit naive, and it's just making sure that we don't go in there and just go wild and get completely distracted. And I suppose we're working with, you know, athletes that have been to Olympic Games before, and they're trying to explain the craziness of the village. And so we're just trying to get as much information as possible as to what it's going to be like, so that we're not too overwhelmed by the whole thing.
Mary, I'd just bring you into this wee bit here. Like, as a gold medalist and as someone who's been in that environment, what advice would you give to the ladies as they're heading off here?
Just enjoy it.
Yeah.
It happens to so few people that become Olympians. You know, it's a very exclusive club. Yeah. And, you know, I had the privilege of not only competing at three Olympics in Tokyo, Mexico and Munich, but I also team managed at two Olympics and also worked with the British Olympic Association in future Olympics after that. So I've been around for a long time. And I just think if you can enjoy every minute of it, as you have shown that you can, that the joy of success will be so much greater. And even if it's failure in your eyes, because you didn't make it to the first three or whatever your dreams are, you've still had that joyous experience of saying, I am an Olympian. You know,
that's awesome. So yeah, Katie, look, there's just a bunch of questions that we end these episodes on. The first one, I guess, would be, out of everything so far, and take this literally whatever direction you want, what would you describe as the most challenging moment, and how were you able to overcome it?
Definitely the day that they announced that the Olympics was being postponed for a year. Mm. That was, yeah, I think just for 8 years, it was July 2020 in the brain. And I think what made it so much more difficult was, as players, we felt we couldn't show our disappointment, or we couldn't speak about our disappointment, because we're in the middle of a global pandemic and there was so much worse going on in the world. So you nearly had to internalize it, and that made it harder to deal with. So and our team are so close and we rely on each other so much. So then to go through that, where we were all dotted all over the country in lockdown and not able to kind of come together and sort of live it together. Yeah.
Tough. So how did you push through it?
Lots of Zoom calls. lots of Zoom calls and I suppose distractions. Mm-hmm. At the start, but it definitely was. It was not something that we just got over in a matter of days, and it wasn't then until we were back on the pitch together in September that it was like, right, we've now got another extra bonus of extra months to train and be better and be stronger, and that was just the mindset we took.
Very positive.
Yeah. It took a while to get to that positive conclusion. Yeah. But
because I'm disappointed that I'm not even getting... I wanted to go back to Tokyo, you know, to experience...
Of course.
...all those years ago. What I wanted to ask you was, if you were back being 18, what advice would you give to yourself?
Definitely to make sure to enjoy the highs as much as I possibly could. It's something that I'm so proud of when I think of the World Cup, was that we enjoyed our win in the first game against America as much as we enjoyed the win in the semi-final. Mm-hmm. And I have such fond memories from that time, but I think back to when I was like 18, 19, 20 and I was constantly looking at the next thing instead of just living in the moment and being proud of myself and being pleased with my success. It was like, right, well, what's next? What do I need to do next? What's, do you know? And sometimes as athletes, you get so bogged down at looking at what's next. You don't just live in the moment of success and really, really enjoy it. So that's definitely what I tell my younger self.
This is a bit of a new question for me. It's the first time I'm trying it out. So let's just see how it goes. Would you say you're more motivated by the joy of winning or by the pain of losing?
Ooh, that's a great question. I'd say the joy of winning. Mm. The idea of how special it felt and always chasing that feeling again is I find very motivating, especially with your mates. Mm. You know, there's something about being able to look at yourself and see yourself smile, but it doesn't touch on looking at the people you care about the most and seeing the joy it brings to them. That's what brought me the most joy and success, is seeing other people's happiness.
So cool.
I just wanted to know, are you going back to your biomechanical or biomedical engineering, or have you thought about coaching or media or any other aspect of a career?
After? Yeah, I've always coached, so I'm back now coaching with the club I grew up in, Ballymoney Hockey Club, and I love going back and giving back to the club and seeing the youth come through. I need to learn a lot more patience as a coach. But I do have huge interest in my biomedical engineering career, and so I can't see myself stepping away from that fully. I've experienced a bit of the media side of things and I really enjoy that as well. But I do think I'll still always take over I ended up prolonging my university degree for a few years. So I put 7 years into it, and I still have huge interest in the area. So I think it's always something I'll continue to work in.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to go into any employment world, you know, in the future, being an Olympic medalist as well. That'll be nice for any business to have on their corporate team or their startup team.
Yeah, I think that would add a lot of value to the old CV.
100%.
Be nice.
Look, final question, I suppose. If you could take any Northern Irish sports personality, dead or alive, out for a cup of coffee, who would you take?
Oh, that's a very good question. You've thrown me there.
Don't worry, editing is a wonderful thing. Well, she answered that so quickly.
I think it would be very interesting to pick the brains of Jonathan Ray. I think, yeah, he's a pretty great winner and has had huge success, and no matter what curveballs he gets thrown, he always seems to just back it up by being more successful, which is a very, very impressive characteristic that he has. And yeah, I'd love to find out more about the real Jonathan Ray, I suppose.
That's awesome. Well, Katie, look, thank you so much for your time today. We really, really appreciate it, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Sport Inspires is a Best of Belfast production, recorded in collaboration with the Mary Peters Trust and made possible by the Coca-Cola Thank You Fund. To find out how you can support and develop future Northern Ireland athletes, please visit marypeterstrust.org to donate today. Or you can join our 200 Club, where your £5 monthly donation enters you into a £350 cash draw every month. Thank you so much for listening today. Hope you enjoyed it as I did, and I hope you have a fantastic rest of the day.